On this week's edition of New York Now, this year's legislative session began in New York this week. We'll have details. Then, Assembly Republican leader Will Barclay joins us with a reaction to the week in D.C. and his priorities for this year's session. The COVID-19 vaccine is getting a slow rollout in New York, and Governor Cuomo is turning up the heat.
The vaccination rate has tripled since Monday.
We'll discuss that and look ahead to Cuomo's State of the State next week with Anna Gronewald from Politico and Kate Lisa from Johnson Newspapers. And Tom Stebbins from the Lawsuit Reform Alliance tells us why New York City is being called a judicial hellhole. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass
legislation that prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. It was a week of chaos in Washington, D.C., but back in Albany, lawmakers kicked off this year's legislative session. If you don't know, session usually runs from January through June in New York, and this year it's expected to get messy. Not only is the state facing a $15 billion budget deficit, Democrats now hold a supermajority, and they could use that leverage on a few key issues, including ways to fill the budget gap. But for lawmakers, this is a year like no other. Take a look.
This is the New York State Senate. Usually these seats would be full, but the COVID-19 pandemic has driven the state legislature to convene virtually since last spring. And this year is no different. Lawmakers kicked off this year's legislative session at the state capitol Wednesday in a building that would usually be full of energy.
Usually the chamber would be buzzing with activity, the hallways filled with smiling faces. This year, as you know, it's different.
Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins entered the state Senate for the first time Wednesday with a new supermajority of Democrats. They now hold 43 seats. That's more than two-thirds of the chamber. And she said the economy will be a top priority for Democrats as the state grapples with a $15 billion budget deficit.
Our state's finances are in desperate shape, and we have a budget deficit to tackle.
Stewart-Cousins said Democrats would back higher taxes on the wealthy and the legalization of both marijuana and mobile sports betting as ways to help the state's finances. That would likely happen in the state budget, which is due at the start of April.
We need to get serious about making sure that everyone shares the burden. We need to make sure that more of the millionaires and billionaires who have gotten even richer step up during this pandemic.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, meanwhile, threw cold water on that idea this week, saying tax hikes on the rich wouldn't generate nearly enough revenue to fill the state's budget gap.
Highest rate, any millionaire, it only raises about $1.5, $1.6 billion. We have a $15 billion gap.
On the other side of the aisle, Senate Republican leader Rob Ortz said this week that Democrats should find areas to cut spending instead of creating new taxes.
We have a $170 billion budget. You'll never convince me that New York's primary problem is a revenue problem. It is a spending problem.
The state assembly didn't see as much action this week, instead opting for a few brief remarks to open this year's session. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie was reelected to the top position in the chamber, which has been led by Democrats for decades.
Our accomplishments over the past year are true testament to our perseverance in getting New York getting work done on behalf of the people of New York.
Lawmakers are back in Albany Monday for Cuomo's State of the State address and the second week of what's expected to be a tumultuous legislative session.
And we will be taking Governor Cuomo's State of the State address live here on PBS Monday. Keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, let's break down the week with Anna Gronewald from Politico and Kate Lisa from Johnson Newspapers. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
So session started this week. It was on Wednesday, the first day of session. It was not very eventful, I will say. Anna, were you in the building?
I don't remember
who was there. I was in the Capitol as well. What did you think of the first day of session? I was in the Senate. I didn't see what happened in the Assembly, but it was a lot of fanfare this week, as we just showed on the show.
I mean, typically the first day of session is, but you would see new members normally in a normal year, you know, walk around the halls looking for the bathrooms, trying to figure out what was going on. And it's kind of like a first day of school vibe. We didn't get that at all. In fact, the halls were super empty. It was very quiet, and it was a kind of a huge juxtaposition because we were all watching what was happening in Washington, which is obviously a night and day difference.
It feels like that happened 2 weeks ago, yeah. The chaos in Washington compared to session. Session was Wednesday, obviously. So, Kate, what do you think about what's going to happen this session? I mean, everything is kind of revolving around the budget deficit, but we have some other issues out there as well.
Absolutely. I think really that the biggest thing I anticipate, though, that I think the budget will be the focus probably first. The revenue raisers that people have been talking about, raising taxes. I know that the Assembly Speaker kind of hinted at that at the end of the year, and I think everyone's been kind of excited not as excited to hear what that tax raise might be, but so I feel like that might be those conversations have to start sooner rather than later, right? So that's what I'm most looking forward to hearing about.
Right, we have 3 months, and so the budget is due at the end of March. The end of March is a flexible term sometimes. It's due at the end of March. Sometimes it comes the first week of April. Anna, what do you see as coming up in this year's session? Obviously, I think the budget is going to be the biggest thing this year, but what other key issues are you watching?
Well, I think, the governor has also indicated that this is tied into the budget, but that legalizing recreational marijuana might finally happen this year after multiple years of working on it and saying it was just too tricky to get done. Right now, that's something that could raise money in the long-term future, and that's so a little bit more of a push for that. And I think he also talked about sports betting, which will be another big issue that folks have been working on for a while. But like Kate said, I don't know that anything can actually be discussed without putting it in the context of the idea that there's not that much money to do very much.
Right, that's the thing, is these issues like marijuana and sports betting are going to the front of the line right now because of the huge deficit that we're in. And I should note that the Cuomo administration had thought that online sports betting was unconstitutional a few years ago, which is why they didn't side with it. And now that we need the money, now they found a way to make it happen.
There's always a way.
Exactly. And I want to stay with you because we have this discussion this week about the vaccine rollout in New York and how it's slow. And the vaccine rollout is controlled by the state. The federal government gives us the vaccine. The state kind of takes it from there. The governor had some views this week about why it's being rolled out so slow. What has he said?
Well, the governor is prioritizing healthcare workers, saying that that's the first line of defense, that those folks all need to be vaccinated first so they're not spreading to others. And I know counties, localities, New York City, and some of the county leaders across the state have said that not only do they have ways to distribute their vaccines that they've been issued more efficiently, but they also think that it should go to different types of more vulnerable populations like nursing homes or the very elderly. And so there's been a bit of a disagreement there, and so far we haven't seen the Cuomo administration indicate that they are looking to tweak the plan at all from getting the healthcare workers.
It's such a weird situation to be in because I feel like everybody's clamoring to everybody wants a vaccine. Not everybody, but a lot of people want vaccines. And it seems like we're going so slow. And then there are these hospitals that have a surplus of the vaccine. So I think a lot of people at home are wondering, well, if you have too many and you can't get them to people in this group, why aren't we moving on to the next group? So that's the question that I think that's on everybody's minds right now.
And I can't imagine the logistics of this. You have to keep vaccines at certain temperatures. Like the way that this actually rolls out, the coordination, I'm sure, is far beyond anything we can imagine, but it seems like there's just not been as much communication among all parties as might make it go more efficiently.
Which is kind of like the MO of the Cuomo administration, I should say. That's kind of like what they like to do, is just take something and have total control and no coordination with anybody else, because I think that they think that they're best suited for it, which in some times they are. Kate, looking ahead to next week, speaking of the Cuomo administration, the State of the State is coming up on Monday. We don't really know what it's going to look like because the governor may give multiple speeches. He may have several proposals. What are you watching for?
Again, I think while we've all been waiting with bated breath for some more details from him, I know he said that he's waiting on the federal government when President-elect Joe Biden takes office January 20th to see what kind of federal aid the state will get. And so I guess we won't have that information for this, but maybe he'll hint, I'm sure, messages of hope and unity as we're going forward, because we are starting a new chapter here. And I also think that he will maybe start to talk about some things that he hinted at last spring with talking about like in infrastructure and those big kind of projects to revitalize the economy, similar to how FDR did with the New Deal back in the Great Depression, because we could be looking at such a deep recession. We could head, unfortunately, there. So I'm excited to see how he frames that.
Right. Economists say that usually the second year of an economic downturn is worse than the first year. So we've gone through the first year almost, so we're entering the second year.
We got to buckle up.
Yeah, we got to buckle up. It's going to be very tough on everybody. Unless, I don't know, some magic happens with math. I'm not a budget person. And a last word, what are you expecting to get from the State of the State this year? It's going to be very different. It's going to be virtual, we know. So there's not going to be quite as much fanfare. What are you looking for?
Well, yeah, like you said, there's always, it's normally a big who's who event and people just pack into the egg down here in Albany. And it's kind of, again, it's kind of this like first day of school thing where everyone's together trying to figure out what's going on. I think that there will, as Kay said, there'll probably be like a lot of issues that we have already seen before, but probably a good number of them, because there'll be a couple very contentious measures, I think a good number of them will be things that can bring people together. The environment, the infrastructure projects. I think that would make a lot of sense because we'll need something to all be happy about.
Exactly. I hope so. So we'll leave it there. Anna Grobold from Politico, Kate Lisa from Johnson Newspapers. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
A lot of big issues are expected to come up in Albany this year, but chief among them is the state budget deficit, as we said. Democrats control both houses of the legislature, and they're considering new taxes on the rich and a series of other revenue raisers. But Republicans are hoping to add their voice to negotiations as well. Assembly Republican Leader Will Barclay joined me this week for an update. Leader Barclay, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime. So before we get to session, I want to touch on what happened in Washington, D.C. this week. A lot of Democrats have blamed the president and some Republican members of Congress for what happened at the Capitol, the violence there. I'm wondering, as one of the state's leading Republicans, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think, first of all, we condemn what happened in Washington. Obviously, we don't mind protest, but protest needs to be peaceful. When it crosses a line and enters violence, when they're breaking down, you know, into the Capitol, I think that goes too far. So I think we all need to step forward and say, no, this isn't all right. Whether it's Democrat protesters, Republican protesters, that's fine, but just can't have, you know, tremendous violence. And obviously the tragedy of having some deaths down there was too bad, really bad.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to this year's session, because that's what I want to primarily talk to you about. The state is facing a $15 billion budget deficit. It's going to be a tough haul for lawmakers and the governor in this year's budget process. Republicans are in the minority in the assembly, but they often voice how they would like to balance the budget. I'm wondering, from your perspective, how could the state come out of this $15 billion budget gap if the federal government doesn't provide us with enough aid to fill that hole?
Well, first of all, that is going to be a huge issue, I think, going through. We do have a new administration, obviously, coming into Washington. I happen to believe that it is the federal government's role to help states with COVID cost. And obviously, New York had some tremendous costs as a result of COVID. So I'm still optimistic that there may be more aid. I'd like to see that go directly to localities, not necessarily have any filter through the state. I think localities are ones that are really suffering, you know, with their budget shortfalls going forward. The one thing I think I feel, and I know my conference feels, is certainly we can't be raising taxes. New York already has an incredibly high tax rate, whether it's income tax, whether it's sales tax, property tax, you name it, we lead the country in taxes. So, and it, unfortunately, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle always seem to, that's their first choice, COVID or non-COVID, they always want to raise taxes. So we would push back on that. But we're going to have to make tough decisions. Ultimately, you know, we spent a lot of money in New York State, and I think that probably is not going to be able to continue just because, as you said, we're facing what, a $14, $15, $16 billion shortfall, and that's just not going to be sustainable.
You know, when we're looking at places where the state may be able to cut spending, are there areas that your conference has identified that you might want Democrats to take a closer look at to try to save some money so that they don't
Sure.
have to raise taxes and raise revenue in different ways?
And again, some of these things we've been suggesting before COVID, but I think they're more, you know, appropriate now than ever. How about some of the economic development programs that we've seen, we haven't seen great return on? The tax credits for Hollywood movie studios, things like that. Now, that's not going to necessarily get to the $15 billion. but I think it's a good start. And I think there's a lot of stuff that we can do more efficiently in New York State. I've talked about for years school aid formula, where we're putting a lot of aid to higher wealth districts and not as much to low wealth. If we made a more equitable school aid formula, the state wouldn't have to pump as much money into state aid as or school aid as we do now. So there's things like that that we can do. It's going to be tough, though. I don't think any of us can be naive the fact that very difficult decisions are going to have to be made going forward. You know, Dan, that's one of the reasons I think we ought to. One thing we have to do is reassert the legislative's power in Albany. We've obviously granted the governor some extraordinary powers back in the spring that he still has. And there's no reason now that we're, you know, being able to meet remotely. We had our first day of session yesterday. There's no reason that the legislature can't reassert itself, particularly as these budget issues comes up. I think that's when we really do have to have a strong voice.
You know, I have to ask you, because Democrats have the majority in both the Senate and the Assembly, and we often see big and small issues, the Democrats that lead both chambers can't agree on even them. If we give power back to the legislature, do you think that they can have as an effective response to the pandemic as the governor had in the spring?
Well, I think they're going to have to, and I certainly want to work with my colleagues in our conference to accomplish that. But do we want just one person running New York State? And, you know, maybe when they're actually addressing an emergency situation and the COVID pandemic, maybe. But I think when we talk about bigger issues like the budget, certainly I was elected to come down here and represent my constituency. And I assume that's the case with all my colleagues in the legislature. So we ought to have a voice in that. And I'll look to work with them, and hopefully they can also work and we can get some sort of good outcome. And it's not just, you know, similar to what we see happening in other places like in Washington.
So besides new taxes, Democrats have some ideas to raise revenue for the state. Two of them that were in the news this week were the legalization of marijuana for recreational use and the legalization of online sports betting, two very big controversial issues in the state. I want to ask you about online sports betting first. So Republicans in the Senate, I know, are in support of legalizing that. Where do Republicans in the Assembly stand?
So first of all, I'm just a little bit hesitant. I don't have a problem looking at both these issues, but I do have a problem when we're looking at it as a way to raise revenue. I think if we're just doing that, then we're looking at the wrong perspective from a policy standpoint. We have to let these, you know, stand or fall on their own basis, not just because we're doing desperate money for money on the state. So that, but our conference with sports betting, we haven't conferenced it. So I don't even know where I stand at. I'd like to see a little bit more detail. This isn't something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to take a lot of, you know, legislating, frankly, and I just want to see what the details are on that, and we'll conference it at some point, and probably, I don't know if we'll get unanimity on it. There are probably some people in our council will be opposed to it, some will probably be in favor of it.
And you think it's the same with marijuana? You're still divided in your conference, or I know that in the past, the Assembly Conference, the Assembly Republican Conference has been against legalization. Do you see that changing?
It could. I still think probably for the majority of our members, again, we haven't conferenced this, but I would guess the majority of our members probably are opposed. I am opposed for it. You know, we're outlawing vaping. We're trying to push back on smoking. We obviously have problems with alcohol. It seems to me that we're heading in the complete wrong direction of legalizing another drug. But people might have different opinions. Also, we want to see, again, the devil can be in the details, and there's obviously what they're going to do with the revenue. They're talking about expunging people's records, et cetera. So we'd want to see all the details of what's being proposed there before we take a position.
Before I let you go, Republicans in the Assembly have had a top priority since I've been covering the Capitol of trying to make state government more transparent, especially in the Assembly, also in the Senate, and trying to provide more access to the state government for the people of the state. I know that's going to be a priority for you again this year. Tell me about the changes that you'd like to see in the Assembly to improve that transparency and the ethics there.
Well, I appreciate you asking that question, Dan. First of all, just yesterday in opening session, we renewed the last year's rules that limited our ability to debate from 30 minutes to 15 minutes. And we just think that's a complete backwards way to go. One of the strongest things we do as a minority is debate bills and point out, you know, where we think legislation's bad or where we think legislation's good. And by taking our voice away, I think it's completely the wrong direction. So one of the rules changes that we're going to continue to push back is to get back to that 30-minute debate period. I think that's critical. But, you know, transparency, you know, that is critical that we push it away. The budget process has been historically, you know, three men, as you know, behind closed doors. There's no reason other government bodies do it in a more transparent, open way. And if we could do that, we think ultimately be a much better product at the end of the day. So we're going to continue to push at every level, ethics, transparency, budget transparency, legislative transparency. And we have a whole host of rules changes that will help provide that or accomplish that.
All right. Assembly Republican Leader Will Barclay, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
We'll speak with Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie next week. But first, a look at the state's justice system. New York City is currently ranked as the second worst judicial hellhole in the country by the American Tort Reform Foundation. And there are broader issues in New York's courts as well. I spoke this week with Tom Stebbins from the Lawsuit Reform Alliance. Tom, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be with you, Dan.
So tell me why the American Tort Reform Foundation considers New York City to be a, quote, judicial hellhole.
Well, I mean, the question is, why do we only get number two? We are number one on so many categories. We are the highest for medical liability payouts. We are the highest for construction insurance. We are the highest on per capita tort tax, which is the cost that everybody pays for our system. New York City spends more on lawsuits than the next 19 largest U.S. cities combined. I don't know how we didn't get number one, but we got number two from this national organization, the American Tort Reform Foundation, and we're perennially on this list. We're frequently here. It's been a long time. We were seeking, and our organization is seeking to get us off this list, try to get some fixes in the system so that we can bring those costs on everybody down.
So when you say that we spend the most on litigation, what do you mean? Are courts clogged up? Are there too many lawsuits, I guess, is what we're looking at? What does that mean?
There's too many lawsuits and there's too many lawyers. We have more lawyers per capita than any other state. And you see this when you drive down the highway. You know, you see these billboards for personal injury lawyers. You see this when you're up late watching television and you see ads for trial lawyers and personal injury lawyers. We just have a lot of lawyers and a lot of lawsuits, and that costs us all a lot of money. Whether you're going to the hospital or you're driving down the highway, you're paying for this. And so that's why we're trying to bring those costs down.
So I have to ask, because the flip side of this is people might ask, well, we're so litigious in New York State, we have this access to litigation that maybe other people don't have in other states. And that unfortunately results in New York City being a judicial hellhole. But tell me why it's sort of a bad thing that we have this access to litigation that other places don't have.
Sure. I mean, it's important. Hey, if you are wronged, if you are injured through the negligence of another, you should sue them and you should recover. We're not trying to take that right away. That right is important. It's fundamental. It's constitutional. And we strongly believe that people should recover. But the numbers show that New York is far and away higher than everywhere else. I mean, the fact that New York City spends more than the next 19 largest U.S. cities combined should be alarming to everyone. Anybody who lives in New York City, but anybody who lives in New York, we're paying those taxes and we're paying for those lawsuits. And again, if you have a reasonable lawsuit to recover, go get them, recover. We believe in that. But the numbers show that we're so far out of whack from the rest of the country.
You know, another side of this, the civil justice system in New York, we have this other problem where some people just don't have access to civil justice. And that's why we talk about things like civil legal services across the state. How do we create more access to civil litigation for people who need it without running into this problem where we're clogging up the courts with litigation that might not seem necessary or just may not be needed?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we've seen is the prevalence of these lawsuit loans that allow people to get money in advance of their loans. And I would caution anybody watching this to read the fine print. One of the things that we're advocating for is caps on the interest rates that these lenders charge. A study came out this August showing that these loans, on average, are charging 68% APR. 68%. The criminal usury rate in New York, for which you go to jail, is 25%. And yet, because these lawsuits operate in this backwater of regulation, they are on average charging 68%. So people need to be careful about loans like this. They do. We believe that the loan should exist, improve people's access to justice, but they shouldn't get victimized again when the loan comes due.
So is anything on the table in the legislature to try to regulate the lawsuit lending industry? I was going to ask you about that. I'm glad you brought it up. Is anything cooking on it?
Yeah, so Senator Kaplan and Assemblyman Magnarelli have a bill to cap the interest rates, and it also does lots of other things. It provides transparency on these loans. It makes sure that the lawyer isn't actually involved in one of these loans. It allows for a lot of extra protections, but the key is the interest rate cap. And so we're thrilled with Senator Kaplan and Assemblyman Magnarelli for carrying these bills. It passed the Senate unanimously in 2016. Back when the Republicans controlled it and Senator Ort was carrying that bill. Now we have the Democrats and we hope that they do it again. I love Senator Ort still on the bill, and you actually have Senator Skoufis on the bill as well. So they probably, those two probably don't agree on much, but I'm glad they agree on this issue.
All right, that's something we'll be watching. Tom Sevens from the Lawsuit Reform Alliance, thanks so much.
Dan Clark, thank you so much.
Before we let you go, a reminder that we'll be hosting live coverage Monday of Governor Cuomo's State of the State address. That's live Monday on your local PBS station. We'll also be streaming it on our website. That's at nynow.org. But until then, thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.